My name is Tommy. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic and addict. My sober date's August 9th of 2015, and for that, I'm truly grateful. I was talking to Chris last week, and I asked him if I could hop in and share my story, with the ranch closing down, and I just thought it was appropriate to do this before we close. So I'll try not to get too emotional throughout this because, this has been an emotional time, right? But let me start I was born August 3rd of 1970 in Galveston, Texas. My mother was a single mom. I was born, my dad was not around when I was born. My mom had some issues with me. I had some problems with my feet, my legs. I ended up having to wear casts and braces until I was 5 years old. So, the problem started when I was born, right? I lived immediately after I was born. I did stay in the hospital for a few weeks. I had to have a couple of surgeries. My grandmother ended up taking me home with her because my mom was young. She was 18 when she had me. She was unwed. And my grandmother thought that it was best for her to take me home and raise me, which was great. My mother was one of 12 children. So with me, it was 13, right? I grew up the first time that I really realized, I grew up thinking that my grandmother was my mother. My mother was not around very much. And I remember I was probably about 5 or 6 years old when I really actually realized that my mom was my mom, and not because they were hiding anything from me or anything like that. It was just that she was never around. And, my grandmother was my primary caregiver. My grandmother got sick when I was about 10 years old, or I was probably 8, 9 years old. She got sick and she had cancer that consumed her, and she died pretty quickly after she was diagnosed. But before she passed away one of my family members, one of my uncles had started abusing me sexually, and along with one of my cousins, his daughter. And so, that was real confusing for me. I remember I was real young, and the whole feeling like, there's this person in my life that's supposed to, that says they love me, but they're hurting me. And it was a real confusing time. And then my grandmother got sick and shortly thereafter passed away. And so chaos kind of, started. I felt real displaced after my grandmother passed away. And so after she died, I stayed with my grandfather for about a year, but then about a year after she passed away, my aunt went and picked me up because my grandfather wasn't able to take care of me anymore. And that was kind of the beginning of total chaos in my life and instability. From the time that I was about 11 or 12 years old, when I left there, till I was 16, almost 17, I probably went to a dozen different schools. I went from living with one of my aunts. I stayed with my mother for a little while. I got in trouble with my mother. My mother would ship me off. I went and lived with my dad. I lived with an uncle. I came back to live with my mother. There was no stability. I had felt like I didn't feel at home anywhere. So, for me, it started, kind of after my grandmother passed away, that I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. I started using first time I used was an uncle, and I started smoking pot. I was about 12 years old, 13 years old. And I remember the first time, all I could do was laugh. I couldn't stop laughing. And I liked the way it made me feel. I really enjoyed it. you know, but then I would end up, you know, I think I ended up like munching out on everything and then passing out. Cause I was, you know, it would, with pot, it always made me at the end of the day. I mean, that's what would relax me. Anyway, I was 12 when I did that. By the time I was 13, I had started, I had been introduced to meth for the first time, and I started drinking. And at that point, I was living here in Austin with my mother. I ran away a few times. I mean, I, you know, was skipping school, was just, I mean, you know, just doing whatever it is that I wanted to do. And, you know, of course, my mother, she didn't know how to handle me or didn't know what to do, never really stopped to find out why I was doing the things that I was doing, but just said that, you know, you need to go somewhere else. And so, you know, it went on like that for a little while. And the first time I was introduced to meth, I mean, I kind of did it, you know, here and there, never really bought it until I met my son's father, which I was 16. And that was the last time that I moved back to Austin for the final time. And I was up in here since then. And, you know, that was kind of the relationship with my son's father was just consisted of drug use, partying, and drinking. And that's what we did. I ended up pregnant. I did end up moving in with him. And I had Brandon when I was 18 years old. And, but the day that I had him, I still remember, I mean, I stopped using during my pregnancy, and that was only by the grace of God, because everybody was using around me, and it was one of the most difficult things that I had to do. The day I got home from the hospital, and my mother came and picked him up and took him and kept him for a couple of nights, and I started using again. And that was the first time Brandon's dad was the one who introduced me to the needle. And that was the first time that I had ever used it. And I completely and utterly fell in love with the way that it made me feel. I always loved the uppers. I mean, meth was my thing. I really, until it, you know, it took over. Right. I went along like that for a couple of years with Brandon's dad, and he, you know, he was very abusive, beat me up a few times, and then finally ended up leaving him and taking my son with me and staying with a friend. And that's when I got with my ex-husband. And through this time, I knew Sean. I mean, we were all kind of like friends, and we all hung out. And so when Sean and I got together, we kind of vowed that we weren't going to use any more meth, right? We were going to try and clean up our lives and do the right things. And the one thing I did do, I did go back and get my GED. I went, because I had dropped out of high school, and I went back and I got my GED. And then I went to this trade school. It was like a year-long business school that I went to. It was at the time when computers were coming out, and I knew that I didn't want to just work at McDonald's. I mean, I still remember knowing that I needed to do something to try and get some sort of education. And so I did that, and I finished that school by the time I was 19, 20, whenever I left Brandon's dad. And so, you know, when I quit using meth, though, what I ended up doing was just going to drinking. I became an alcoholic, is what happened. That's how it went on for me. I mean, when I got tired of the hangovers and got tired of losing jobs and got tired of, you know, feeling the way that I was feeling from drinking too much, then I started smoking more pot or popping more pills or doing, I mean, and that's how it went from, you know, my 20s and my 30s. And Sean and I got together, we got married. I was 25. I had Michaela when I was 25. And then we had our youngest when I was 30. And so I managed to stop using smoking pot, drinking, and doing the things that I was doing, you know, during my pregnancies. And that for me was just, I was miserable. I was miserable. And it was hard, but I did end up stopping. But I went right back to it as soon as I had him. And so like I didn't even nurse my children because I didn't want to. I wanted to go back to smoking. I wanted to go back to drinking. I wanted to go back to doing the things that I wanted to do. And so, anyway, I had Michaela at 25. Me and Sean got married when I was 26, I think. And then, I was in this delusion that, you know, we were doing what we're supposed to do as far as society was concerned. I mean, you know, I ended up going and getting my real estate license. I started working in real estate offices. I had, you know, kind of stopped drinking. At that point, I was more of a binge drinker. I would drink, you know, every once in a while, but I drank to get drunk, you know, and smoking pot throughout this entire time, and loved to take pills. I mean, Xanax and painkillers were, you know, I loved to do that and drink a glass of wine. And that was my relaxation, right? And so, you know, we went along for a while, you know, and then it got pretty ugly towards, Sean and I were together for 20 years. We got a divorce. I was 41 years old. About 4 or 5 years before that was kind of when things started unraveling for us. Sean had to have a total hip replacement. He ended up being like unlimited prescriptions for painkillers. And so we, you know, started doing that. We got separated a couple of times. I mean, it was just, you know, I was just in this spot of not being happy, and wanting to blame everybody else and, you know, blame him and blame my kids and blame, I mean, like it was that whole spiritual malady, right? Restless, irritable, and discontent, but not knowing that that's what it was. Right. And I thought I was doing what I was supposed to be doing as a mother because I was there. My mom was never there for me. I mean, so I always thought I've raised my children. I've done for my children. I always felt like I had this sense of entitlement with my, you know, being a mother, and I took care of my kids, but, you know, it was really not there. And my kids grew up in a lot of chaos. I mean, there was a lot of fighting and a lot of yelling and a lot of, you know, craziness. And especially the last 5 years of Sean and our marriage. I mean, it was total chaos. I mean, you know, Sean ended up going, hitting his bottom before I did, and ended up at Austin Recovery, you know, in 2011. And it was by me seeing him do the things that he was doing and the changes that he was making in his life. I mean, you know, I never knew about AA. I mean, Sean had tried to stop drinking at one point when we were, I don't know, maybe 10 years into our marriage. And I mean, I didn't see anything wrong with drinking. I didn't know that there was a reason to stop drinking. I mean, I thought this was normal. I thought I could control it. And, you know, and I was under that delusion because of the fact that when, you know, like I said earlier, when I wanted to stop using meth, I replaced it with drinking. When I wanted to stop drinking, I replaced it with smoking pot or with popping pills or with doing, you know, I mean, you know, the occasional mushrooms or doing the occasional acid, or just, I was constantly looking for something to change the way that I was feeling. And so, you know, as I mentioned, Sean went through treatment. I really hit my bottom after our divorce. I mean, I found meth for a second time in my life. I was 41 after our divorce. I got involved with some people and I found meth again. And I thought, surely I'm older. I can do this. I can just do this on occasion. I can do this on weekends. I can just do this every once in a while. Well, fuck no. It became and it consumed my entire life. And it took, I was 44 years old when I went into treatment. So it took exactly 3 years for me to go from, and granted, I mean, after my divorce, I was like really angry. I was angry at Sean. I was angry. I was just angry. I was angry all the time. I was miserable. I was pissed off at the world. I mean, and, you know, I was forced, you know, I ended up staying with the house. So I was forced to take on all of these responsibilities that we had taken on together. And this is how I looked at it, right? I was forced. Not that I, you know, I was blessed enough to be able to stay with the house. No, I mean, and that was my whole addict mind thinking, you know, just wanting to be pissed off and wanting to be angry. And so I, you know, I ended up using meth again, and it started out just on occasion. And then it started out where I started buying it. And then I started buying it a little bit more, you know, and started doing it during the week. And then it was an everyday thing. It ended up being an everyday thing. At that point, my Michaela ended up, and my son at this time was, he had already gone off to college. He had gotten together with, you know, when Sean and I started having like major problems before our divorce. I mean, Brandon was in college, Michaela was in junior high. And so by the time I got seriously involved, I mean, she was in high school at that point, and then she ended up going off to college, and bless her heart, she suffered. I mean, she, you know, just had to deal with the brunt of just a bunch of shit. And just in the midst of my addiction. And, you know, I was just angry at the world. And so my kids had to feel that too. And so she went off to college, and then it was me and Marissa. And it, within a few months of Marissa, of Michaela going off to college, I mean, I guess Marissa was in junior high, and I think she was in the eighth grade, and she ended up leaving and going to visit with Sean, and she didn't come back. She didn't want to come back. And I mean, it was like that. She just left and she didn't come back. And it broke my heart, because I didn't know what the hell was going on. And she knew what was happening. I mean, she knew that I was doing drugs. I started hanging out with these people, you know, that she didn't know. And so it made her uncomfortable. And so then at that point, my addiction just kind of, it took off. I stopped working, ended up, and at this point I was just doing real estate sales. So I wasn't really working, and I stopped paying my bills. I stopped, you know, so soon after that was when I got foreclosed on. My career was just at a total standstill. I started seeing this guy that ended up introducing me to the needle again, and I started shooting up again. And you know, I went to treatment in August in December of 2014. And so my house was the guy that I was dating ended up in jail, like in September of 2014. My house got foreclosed on in October of 2014. In November of 2014, I ended up in the hospital for a week from an infection in my arm from missing. I almost lost my arm. And when they told me I wasn't going to lose my arm from the infection, they said that it could have gotten into my bloodstream also. And it was a pretty bad infection. And I spent a week in the hospital. And I remember, I mean, I called Sean. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. I didn't know who else to call. I called him and told him I needed to go to the hospital. And he asked me, he's like, so are you willing to tell them what you're doing? I mean, are you willing to do something now? And so like, yeah, I'm willing to do something. And so I ended up going into the hospital, and that's kind of where, you know, I realized at that point, I mean, I you know, in all the years, up to that point, I mean, I did not plan to, you know, be at that point where I had completely, you know, given up on life. And that's what had happened. I gave up on life. And, you know, I spent that week in the hospital. I remember talking to a chaplain came to see me, because there was one day that I was just crying and I couldn't stop crying. And this beautiful woman walked in the door, and she came in and she started talking to me about God, and, you know, and I kind of told her what was going on. And, you know, one of the things that she told me is that she's like, you know, God doesn't ever give up on us. So when you're ready to make the changes that you need to make, you know, he will be there for you. And so, that's when I told Sean I wanted to go into Austin Recovery. And that was the best decision I ever made in my life. You know, I didn't know what it meant to be sober or to be in recovery or what the hell I was walking into. I just knew that I still had a life to live. And, you know, I did not want to end up dead in a hospital with, and that was the thing, is that I didn't want my kids to come see me. My children, you know, they knew that I was in the hospital, and I didn't want them to come see me because I was in so much shame. I felt so much guilt, and that is not how I wanted them to see me. And so, you know, I went into treatment December 15th of 2014. I checked in, and the day I checked in, I mean, Sean had picked me up and I was high. I had spent 2 weeks in the hospital and I ended up being high before I went into treatment. And that's the, you know, that mental blank spot, right? I mean, I wanted to feel better. And so I ended up using again before I went into treatment. And so, you know, I went in there and I was, you know, I was not sure. That first week I didn't even want to stay. And I was looking for every reason, you know, I had to do this, I had to do that. I mean, you know, I have the shed, I've got it, you know, or I've got all my stuff in storage, I need to pay my car note. I mean, all of these things that I was worried about on the outside, right? The world went on without me. And everything was okay, all right? I remember the one thing that, you know, there was a lecture that I went in, and it was Will Miley that did this lecture, and it was on shiny objects or something like that. I can't remember exactly the name of the lecture, but basically talking about, you know, all the distractions of the world, right? We get distracted with all these things and these things we think we need to do and that are important, and really, are they important? And it made me think. I mean, I sat there and I listened to him and I was like, okay, Tommy, none of that shit's going to matter if you can't keep a needle out of your arm. And so I sat down, and I made the decision to stop and listen and do what I needed to do. I went through the 28-day program there, and I checked out, I think it was January 10th or something like that. My grandson was born, I think, on the 11th. It may have been the day after, maybe the 12th. You know, it was the 15th that I was supposed to be out, and I think I got out like a couple of days early. But I didn't, you know, I went to IOP, but I didn't do anything that I was supposed to do. I didn't, you know, I did get a sponsor. I did, you know, ended up going through IOP. I started going to the alumni meetings, and I went to an alumni meeting before I even went into treatment with Sean. He took me to one, and I got to meet Carrie, and I got to meet Robert and some of the alumni that were there. Kevin Sharp and some of those old timers that were there when I walked through the door. And I did that for a few months, and I did complete the IOP, but immediately when I, you know, as soon as I was done with IOP, I was still involved with a guy that I had been involved with in my addiction. I had, you know, that guy that got put in jail. I bailed him out after I got out of treatment, and still stayed involved with him. And it was still, I thought I could stay sober and do still some of the things that I was doing before. And it didn't work. It didn't work. I was sober for exactly 93 days, and I relapsed, and I was out for 5 months. And in that relapse, I mean, you know, keep in mind, I didn't have a house. I was staying, you know, at my mother's, I was staying at friends. I had stuff at my mom's apartment. I had stuff in a storage shed. I mean, I had stuff in my car. Fortunately, I kept my car through that entire time, but only by the grace of God. And, you know, my mother had to make the car payment a few times and pay the insurance and just, you know, it was total chaos. And in my relapse, it just got even worse. But I told myself, okay, so if I can just, you know, if I can just snort it, if I can just smoke it and not shoot it, I will be okay, right? Within a couple of months, I was shooting up again. And even though, you know, I had just spent, you know, a week, just a few months before in the hospital, didn't know if I was going to survive that. It didn't matter. I mean, I was just wanting to change the way that I felt. I thought that was the answer. You know, and through this time, I mean, my relapse, you know, again, I disappointed my children. You know, the one thing that I always tried to, I have two major fears, right? The fear of not being a good enough mother and the fear of financial fear. Those are the two major ones for me. I always wanted to be a better mother than I had, right? And I felt like I was for a long time. I mean, I was there and, you know, and me and my ex-husband we did the best that we could with what we had. I mean, we were together for 20 years. I mean, we gave our children a lot of stability. I mean, our kids stayed in the same school district. They graduated and, you know, with the same friends. We lived in, you know, we lived in three houses instead of a dozen that I, you know, grew up in. And so, you know, there was a lot of things that I worked or I strived for, even in my addiction. And I'm grateful for the things that we were able to accomplish. And I tell Sean that all the time. It's like, you know, there was a lot of things, there was a lot of dysfunction, but there was also a lot of, you know, my son doesn't remember a lot of the chaos. I mean, he feels like his life was pretty normal because it was, you know, up until that point. And just keep in mind, he was already off in college by the time, you know, that last 5 years of our marriage that, you know, when things really got it kind of out of control. And so, you know, there was a lot of good. There was a lot of good that me and Sean were able to give to our children. And I'm grateful for that. While I was out during my relapse, I mean, and I want to share this because it's pretty important that, you know, my Sean, during my relapse, I mean, and I was just talking to some people about this, is that he never called me to judge me or to yell at me or tell me I needed to do, you know, what I needed to do in order to get sober. And, you know, it was never any ugliness. I mean, he'd call me like once or twice a week just to check on me, just to make sure I was still alive. And that's how, and, you know, my youngest daughter, she was still seeing me during my relapse. And, you know, and I remember, I mean, Sean would give me money to take her out to dinner or give me money for gas or just to help me. I mean, just to be there. And so when I made the decision to get back into the program, and he was the first person I called, and I told him, okay, I'm ready to change what I'm doing. My two older kids weren't talking to me at the time. They were pretty angry. I mean, especially because, you know, I'd gone through treatment and they thought that I was going to be okay or that I was going to, you know, stay sober. And especially Michaela, it's been, bless her heart. I mean, I know that she just wanted her mother, right? When I came back into the program, I mean, it was a matter of just getting back into the meetings. I called my sponsor. I called my peer coach. The alumni meeting was the first meeting. That Thursday night meeting was the first meeting I came back to. You know, my sober day is August 15th. And September was when we had the first reunion. Person that was doing Chris's job, Carrie, at the time, I told her, listen, okay, I want to do this deal. So just put me to work. Tell me what I need to do. Tell me how to do it. I will listen to you. And so that reunion was the first reunion that I went back out to the ranch. And I mean, I felt like I was at home. I stayed in the middle. I started volunteering at the ranch. I started doing what I was told to do. I went through the steps. I mean, and I was eager to start sponsoring women. So I was through the steps within, I think it was a five or six months sober by the time I got through all the steps. So I could start sponsoring the women out there. The promises have been happening, you know, over these last, I mean, six years that I've been sober. And I had to take everything very slowly. I mean, you know, one of the things that I did not want to do was I didn't want to make my job my priority. I ended up getting a job making just an hourly wage just to pay my bills and to pay my child support. And my daughter ended up staying with her dad. I mean, and you know, one of the things that I've shared before is that, you know, the one thing that I wanted was my daughter to come back to live with me, you know, after I got sober. And so when I got my first apartment, I mean, it was, I got a two bedroom and so, or a three bedroom. And so that she could have a place to come stay if she wanted to come stay with me. And I had to be okay with the fact that she didn't want to come back to live with me. She was okay with her dad. They had a life. They had, and I had to be okay with the fact that, you know, I got her on weekends and I was okay with that. I mean, you know, I had to allow my children to see me do the work right and start trusting me on their own. But I couldn't just talk and tell them what I was doing. I had to continuously show them what I was doing. That step one experience, it happened for me in that hospital. And, you know, I realized that, you know, I'm powerless and unmanageable. And you know, the powerlessness is not about being weak. It's about, I had, you know, the power of choice was gone for me. The unmanageability was that I couldn't stop no matter what. I couldn't stop because even though I wanted to, and I didn't want to be living the way that I was living. You know, step two and three for me, I mean, they go hand in hand. And I am, you know, I was not 9 months sober when I truly understood the meaning of turning my will over to God. I had an experience where, you know, I was trying to get into an apartment and they wanted me to provide some paycheck stubs and I couldn't. I mean, I was working contract work. And so the guy was just paying me, you know, through wires. And so I couldn't provide paycheck stubs, but the lady didn't understand. I mean, I told her I could give her my bank statements and she was like, no, we need paycheck stubs. And so I was going to create my own paycheck stubs because I can do that. Right. I can get on the computer and I can bake some paycheck stubs and that's what you want. I mean, because that's how I grew up. I grew up with, you know, just, you know, if you want something, go after it and you'll get it, right? I mean, and I knew that I was doing something wrong. I was trying to manipulate a situation. I was manipulating the situation because I wanted to get what I wanted. I stopped what I was doing. I ended up calling a sponsor. I ended up calling my ex-husband and telling him, hey, this is what I was doing. Because I started, that's when I knew that I needed to start telling myself because these are the actions that this delusional mind has, right? Ended up going to a meeting. And what was the meeting on? It was on step three. Okay. And so that's where I turned and I turned it over to God. I was like, all right, God, if you want me to have this apartment, I sent my bank statements in, I got the apartment. Okay. But and it felt so much better because I did not have to manipulate that situation. I sent the bank statements, the lady called me the next day and said, and I just gave it to God. you know, four and five doing my inventory. Okay. So that was pretty, pretty amazing stuff because I could list all the people that I was pissed off at. Right. But then it forces us to look at our part in the whole situation. And what was the common denominator? What was the common denominator in all my relationships? It was me. And so, you know, where I could look at where I was being selfish or self-centered, and understand that. And then when I had to read that to someone else and they, you know, then they give me my, you know, my list of character defects. Okay. It's like, well, shit. Okay. So I have to step back and I have to really look at, you know, and I can look at that today. I can look at, you know, when I have something happening, you know, or an experience that I'm not, you know, or get angry with somebody. I mean, and right now, I mean, I have a lot of that going on with my mother, which is one of my major triggers, but, you know, there was a lot of freedom to sitting down and just doing that and doing the inventory. And like I said, when I came back into the program, I was willing to go to any lengths. And so I got through my steps pretty quickly. And I was eager to start doing that step 12 where I, you know, in giving, you know, start sponsoring other women. But, you know, even with that, I the steps are in the order that they're in, right? We have to do them that way. But, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, we can start helping others like immediately. I mean, when I was in treatment, I remember there was, you know, I was there for a couple of weeks. I mean, and I started doing the programming and I started doing the classes and I started doing the work. And they had, I started asking me to like, you know, kind of mentor new women that were coming in and show them around and show them what, you know, the books that they used to give us, the binders they used to give us. Right. And so, I mean, it can start there and, you know, and I remember, I was just telling somebody about this too, is that, I had, what time is it? It's 7:15. Okay. So I had, one of the things that Maurice had done when we were in treatment is that she had asked us to write a letter to ourselves that she was going to mail to us a year after we got out of treatment, which, keep in mind, I had a relapse, right? So I came in August. So August, September, October, November, December, I got it in January. So it was 5 months sober. And in that letter, I remember I wrote to myself, the one thing that stood out was that I hope that you are helping other women, and being of service to Austin Recovery. And so that was like huge, powerful for me because that, you know, even with that relapse, I mean, I came back in and I started doing what I was supposed to be doing and I was starting, you know, I started doing that. And so, you know, we can be of service, you know, as quickly as day one, you know, and I encourage people to do that because it, for me, has saved my life. There was many times that I was going through stuff and I had a commitment to go to do a panel or I had to go meet with a sponsee really what I wanted to do was maybe crawl into bed because I was struggling with something or I didn't want to deal with life or I didn't want to, you know, but I stuck to my commitments and I did it anyway. And it took me out of myself. Every time. And I could walk away from that, from, you know, that commitment and feel like so much better. And it's just, it's been my foundation and my lifesaver. One thing I want to talk about before I end this is, you know, and a lot of you know this, I just got out of a relationship that I was in for 2 years with this guy that, he had 3 years of sobriety and he relapsed. And, you know, I had decided when I got into a relationship, that I wanted to take my time. I wanted him to, he'd been living in sober living. I wanted him to live on his own for a while. I really wanted to take the slow because I didn't want to get into a relationship and I refused to do it for any selfish reasons, whether it's, you know, financial reasons, you know, make it easier. If I split the rent or do any of that. No, I mean, and that was one of the things that was really important to me was to, I lost everything by myself and I wanted to get back on my feet by myself. With God's help, I mean, obviously, I could not be where I'm at without my higher power. It's been hard, you know, for a few months with this whole relationship thing. But, you know, the one thing that I want to tell y'all is, or tell these, you know, is just taking your time and not, for me, I mean, I wanted to work on myself and I wanted to be nice and I wanted to be healthy and I wanted to be, I didn't want to, you know, be codependent or I didn't want to, you know, depend on anybody else. I wanted to be able to stand on my own. And I'm grateful that I did that because, you know, I wasn't living with him, which made it much easier. And, you know, and he's still out there and I pray for him every day. And I'm grateful that I can walk through this, with God's help and get to the other side of it. And that's one of those things that sometimes God does for me, what I can't do for myself. Right. And I truly believe that. And so if I can stay in a place with whatever I'm going through, you know, even though it's not what I want or, you know, things aren't turning out the way that I want. If I can stay in a place of just completely staying, one with God and just asking him to walk me through it and show me what he wants me to, you know, how he wants me to show up, in that situation. And I really try and stay in that place. I mean, you know, my daily practices are very consistent as far as I get up in the mornings and I do journal on a regular basis. I do a lot of writing. And I've got some readings that I read, you know, on a daily basis. And I do some prayer and some meditation and listen to a lot of meditation music. I fall asleep listening to meditation music, which I feel like has really helped me stay in a very, very zen place. Yeah, I'm just grateful. I'm grateful, grateful, grateful that, you know, that I found this, you know, found this life that I never thought possible. You know, today I'm very comfortable in my own skin. You know, surrounded myself with a lot of people that I know that love me and love me for me and not for what I can do for them. I truly, you know, have stayed one with the alumni and stayed very, very active because, you know, Austin Recovery is where my healing began and the alumni is where my healing continued. And just because Austin Recovery is closing, you know, the alumni was self-supporting before a few years ago. And I don't know what any of this looks like, but I just know that, you know, I have faith that we're going to be okay, whatever that looks like. And we don't get to know that today. We have, as long as I walk through and I just do what I'm supposed to, the next right thing, and I do what I'm supposed to do on a daily basis and ask God for guidance and direction, I'm going to be okay. And I know that, you know, today I have a great relationship with all my children. I get to spend time with my grandchildren. My kids trust me. They can call me and they know that I'm going to be there. My youngest daughter moved back in with me about a year ago and not because she wanted to, but it's okay. I mean, you know, for me, I mean, that was, it was a God thing because it gave me an opportunity to be there for her. I called some of my sponsees because, you know, all I wanted was her to move back in with me, right, when I got sober. Well, you know, I didn't get that the way that I wanted it immediately. My job was to stay sober and do what I was supposed to and stay stable so that I could be available to my children when they need me. And she needed me again. And so she moved back in with me and I've been able to be a mom to her and not, you know, I've tried to be in a place where I'm not, I don't tell my children what to do. I don't tell them how to do it. I am not, you know, I don't believe in dictating to my kids and expecting them to do, you know, I'm there for them. And, you know, and they call me and they want, you know, they ask for advice and they ask for, you know, what my thoughts are and I'll ask them if they want some suggestions and I've learned how to communicate, you know, from a whole different place you know, my life doesn't look anything like I thought it was going to 10 years ago or even 20 years ago when, you know, when I was married and I thought my marriage was going to last forever. But, you know, today, I mean, I have some peace and I have some serenity and I have so much more than I ever thought I could. And it's because I, you know, for me, I mean, it's because I'm working this program, and I am, I'm staying one with my God and I am, you know, staying in faith no matter what happens. I mean, I'm just grateful that I've had the opportunity. And when I say that I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic and addict, I never understood that initially, but you know, I've been given a chance to live two lives in this lifetime. Right. And I like this, this second life that I'm living. And I, you know, I get to look at the past and I get to leave it there. And I'm just, you know, I don't have to live that way anymore. And I'm so grateful for it. And you know, I'm happier than I've ever been. I really am. And you know, it doesn't have anything to do with the house, the car, the job, that it's the peace and the serenity that I have inside of me. And I had to learn that because I, you know, I had to build back up from the ground up. Right. But I took my time and I didn't make the money and the job and the house and the car a priority. I made my sobriety a priority and the rest of that stuff came after. And so, I'm truly grateful and I probably went way over. And I appreciate it. Thank y'all for letting me share. And I love all of y'all. And, you know, we are, all of y'all are alumni and y'all, we're family. So y'all stay close and we will get through all of this.